The wedding invitation that arrived at my Delhi home in January 1991 was more than an invitation. It was a statement of triumph. As 22,000 guests gathered in a transformed football stadium to celebrate Anna Lambani's marriage to former film star Tina Moonam, the spectacle confirmed what many already knew. Dhirubhai Ambani had not just survived political troubles, but had emerged victorious. This textile trader from a small Gujarati village had transformed himself into India's most controversial and celebrated industrialist. His story, filled with political intrigue, market manipulation, and relentless ambition, became required reading for aspiring entrepreneurs across Asia. Even Warren Buffett reportedly keeps a copy of Ambani's biography, fascinated by how this outsider built a corporate juggernaut in one of the world's most regulated economies. Born to a village schoolmaster in Gujarat's Chorwad, Dhirubhai came from the Maud Banya caste of traditional merchants. Poverty forced him to leave school at 16, joining his brother at A. Besse & Co. in Aden in 1949. Even as a Shell representative, his entrepreneurial spirit emerged when he profitably melted Yemen silver coins to sell as bullion in London before authorities stopped him. Despite success at Besse, Dhirubhai studied markets after hours and traded commodities against company policy. By 1958, he left with about $3,000 in savings, which a colleague dismissed as mere chutney for India. Partnering with cousin Chambakil Domini, who invested $100,000, Dhirubhai established Reliance Commercial Corp in a small Bombay office. Initially exporting spices, they quickly pivoted to synthetic yarn trading. In India's controlled economy, Dhirubhai gained dominance by paying higher margins for import licenses, effectively controlling much of the yarn supply. His market influence became legendary, from securing arrested traders' release within an hour to winning a prolonged battle against customs over impounded fiber shipments worth 40 million rupees. After splitting with cautious partner Damani in 1965, Dhirubhai launched Reliance into textile manufacturing with four knitting machines in Gujarat. His timing was perfect. Britain's withdrawal from Aden in 1967 brought European-trained Indian managers from Bess & Co. home, who became crucial to his operation. Dhirubhai's management style balanced demanding standards with fierce loyalty. He'd call managers at 6 a.m., but forgive honest mistakes. When German parts were urgently needed, he purchased two trucks outright when none were available to rent. By 1977, Reliance had grown from 9 million to 680 million in sales, with profits soaring from 1.3 million to 105 million. He established his Vimal brand, named after his nephew, promoting it through lavish advertising and 400 franchise shops that bypassed resistant wholesalers. The partnership with Damani ended after Dhirubhai secretly bought yarn stock against Damani's wishes, then profited when prices rose. Dhirubhai ultimately bought Damani out for $600,000, setting the stage for Reliance's explosive growth. Dhirubhai understood that in India's license-controlled economy, relationships unlocked opportunities and laws were negotiable. With his photographic memory for faces and names, he transformed fleeting contacts into valuable connections. He cultivated relationships across the political spectrum, from Indira Gandhi's secretary to BJP leader Vajpayee. These connections weren't always money-based. Dhirubhai often captivated politicians with his business vision and flattery. For the self-interested, he arranged post-retirement jobs, family business opportunities, or indirect funding. His creative approach to regulation yielded immediate benefits. He would not go into anything unlawful, noted one associate, but his reading of the system, he would take advantage in a way others could not see. His masterstroke came in 1971 when he persuaded the Commerce Minister to authorize polyester filament yarn imports against nylon fabric exports, creating a scheme that made him a fortune through domestic international price differences. As he told associates, "Everything I've done has been kept in the ground, with a first-class fountain built over it. Nobody will ever know what I have done." Indira Gandhi's 1980 return to power marked Dhirubhai's golden era. Within 4 years, Reliance leapt from outside India's top 50 companies to its top 5. In October 1980, Reliance secured one of 3 polyester filament yarn production licenses with capacity nearly matching India's entire existing output. As India liberalized its capital markets, Dhirubhai capitalized masterfully. After going public in 1977, he pioneered convertible debentures, raising an unprecedented $9.4 billion over 8 years, including $5 billion from a single issue. This coincided with India's emerging equity cult. Shareholding expanded from under 1 million Indians in 1980 to 4 million by 1985, with Reliance alone claiming 1 million shareholders. Investors prospered significantly. Profits surged from $82.1 million in 1979 to $713.4 million in 1985, with dividends offering at least 25% return on face value. Even greater gains came through share appreciation, with Reliance stock climbing from $50 in 1978 to $186 in 1982. That year, Dhirubhai demonstrated his market prowess by outmaneuvering a bear cartel attempting to drive down Reliance shares. In November 1985, Bombay's tabloids declared its Mahapolyester War, a corporate battle over the lucrative polyester market with political stakes. The conflict pitted Dhirubhai against Newsley Wadia of Bombay Dyeing, an establishment figure whose family had built ships for the East India Company. The rivalry intensified when Wadia sought to enter polyester production, receiving approval for a plant that would position Bombay Dyeing ahead of Reliance in the petrochemical chain. Despite his approval, Wadia faced mysterious delays with his license, while Reliance's competing projects proceeded smoothly. The conflict escalated when newspaper tycoon Ramnath Goenka allied with Wadia after discovering Reliance had planted stories attacking Bombay Dyeing against his orders. When confronted, Dhirubhai reportedly said, "I have one gold chapel, slipper, and one silver chapel. Depending who it is, I strike him with the gold chapel or with the silver chapel." This remark provoked Goenka to launch an investigation uncovering the Reliance Loan Mela, a scheme where small companies borrowed from banks using Reliance shares as security to invest in Reliance's debentures, effectively allowing the Ambanis to borrow to buy their own shares. After India's 1991 economic liberalization, Dhirubhai repositioned himself as a champion of the new India, freed from failed Nehruvian socialism. Foreign investors overlooked his past. One analyst remarked, "Someone who can smuggle in a whole factory clearly has something going for him." Dhirubhai built Reliance through exceptional skills as an innovative financier, inspiring manager, and forward-looking industrialist. Yet his talents had a darker side, an eye for exploiting human weakness. He circumvented government controls, with regulatory agencies often proving timid or complicit. The Reliance story offers cautionary lessons about institutional effectiveness in protecting investors. While controversies improved financial regulations, Dhirubhai inspired numerous imitators determined to win at any cost. Most tellingly, the conflicts around Dhirubhai reveal India's struggle with the morality of success. Like in the Mahabharata, many Indians were torn between condemning questionable practices and admiring business achievement. Millions wondered if certain deceptions were simply part of a businessman's dharma to succeed against all odds.